Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, Benjamin Ben Meir, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I have two subjects that I'd like to speak about with you. One is the arrest of Jewish children in Israel as part of a so-called Jewish children's underground. And the second is our continuing support for Ted Cruz and why I think it's important and what I think we can accomplish and how I think we can help Ted Cruz in his campaign for the presidency in 2016. But first, 14 Jewish children, all of whom are yeshiva students, were arrested several days ago in Israel. By the way, yeshiva students, what does that mean? A yeshiva is a Jewish parochial school, a school where a Jewish kid tries to get a Torah education. And so 14 yeshiva students, all of whom are minors under Israeli law, they were aged 13 to 16, have been in custody now for several days. They were placed under arrest by the Israeli police. They've been in custody for several days now. And the reason is because they supposedly are part of Tag Mechir. Tag Mechir means price tag in Hebrew. It's a Jewish underground organization, and the reason they call themselves price tag, the reason they call themselves Tag Mechir, is because they want to tell the Arab Muslim Nazis that if you attack Jews, you're going to pay a price. There's going to be a price for it. We're going to retaliate, and you're going to pay a price. That's why they call themselves price tag. Now, some of the things that they've been involved with, there have been hundreds of incidents. Some of the things they've been involved with include spray painting graffiti on Arab Muslim Nazi property, slashing tires on Arab Muslim Nazi cars, firebombing Arab Muslim Nazi cars, firebombing Arab mosques, and so on. There have also been some incidents which have not involved Jewish kids that the Arabs themselves have been caught red-handed doing and pretending that it's Tag Mechir, in order to discredit Tag Mechir. The Arabs themselves have committed certain acts. Sometimes the Arabs have feuds with other Arabs, and so they commit these acts and then claim Tag Mechir did it. That's one thing that has happened several times, and they've been caught red-handed. They also a couple of times attacked Christian targets in Israel, and these were Muslims doing this, and then they attacked Christian targets and then blamed the Jews. So that was not Tag Mechir. But the graffiti and the slashing of car tires and the arson against Arab Muslim vehicles and Arab Muslim mosques, that was Tag Mechir. And that's something that did happen hundreds of times in Israel over the past several years as retaliation for Arab Muslim Nazi murder of innocent Jews. Arab Muslim Nazi terrorists have murdered Jews, have attacked Jews, relentlessly, Arabs have raped Jewish women and Jewish girls. And on numerous street corners and numerous highways, Arabs throw rocks and stones at Jews. There is massive rock throwing and attacks on Jews all over the land of Israel. And so Tag Mechir is an organization that decided we're going to retaliate. We're going to show that you're going to pay a price for this. We believe that all 14 of these children are innocent. We believe that the police desperately want to make arrests in the case, that the Israeli police, the Israeli media, the Israeli government, the Israeli establishment desperately want to show that they're cracking down and making arrests. And so they've rounded up 14 kids. I don't believe any of these 14 kids committed any illegal acts. They are all innocent, and all of them should be released immediately. But I want to say that if they do ever catch anyone who does do any of these things, is this something that such a big deal should be made out of, that Jewish kids spray paint graffiti on Arab Muslim Nazi property after Arab Muslim Nazis murdered innocent Jewish men, women, and children? And some Jewish kids supposedly spray paint graffiti on the property of Arab Muslim Nazis in retaliation, and that becomes a bigger deal than the murder of innocent Jews? I mean, what a vicious anti-Semitic double standard, what a sick, twisted way of looking at the world when you're a self-hating Jew. Self-hating Jewish anti-Semites are the sickest people on the face of the earth. They are warped, sick, twisted people. And they run the entire Israeli media and the Israeli government and the Israeli army and the Israeli police. They run Israel. And the big Israeli corporations, they are the establishment in Israel. And many average Israelis don't like them. Many average Israeli Jews are fed up with the establishment. And many average Israeli Jews are very sympathetic to these kids. And I'm not talking about the kids who were arrested. The kids who were arrested, in my opinion, are innocent. I don't think they're involved with any of this. But there are other kids out there that are committing these types of acts. And to make such a big deal about it, in my opinion, is a scandal, is an outrage. We don't advocate illegal activity. We are a law-abiding organization. We do not advocate any illegal activity. But if somebody picks up a spray paint can and spray paints somebody's property, to compare that to the mass murder of Jews, which the Arab Muslim Nazis have engaged in since the founding of Israel, thousands of innocent Jewish men, women, and children have been massacred. And the murderers of Jews have been handed Jewish land in Judea, Samaria, Gaza. And Benjamin Netanyahu and his traitor government are now negotiating with these Arab Nazi terrorists in Fatah and the PLO to create a so-called Palestine state and hand over the entire Jewish biblical homeland to them, to hand over Israel's capital, Jerusalem, to them. And so, if there are Jewish kids out there, if there are 13, 14, 15-year-old Jewish kids out there that decide to pick up a paint can and spray paint some graffiti, or even if they decide to damage some Arab property, damage a car or damage a mosque, damage some property. To make such a big deal out of that is an outrage. When you compare that to what the Israeli government and the Muslim terrorists supported by the Israeli government have been doing to the Jewish people. And yes, the Israeli government funds the Muslim terrorists, gives them free electricity. The Arab Muslims in Israel, millions of them, receive free electricity, free water, free gas, free food, free medicine, free education, don't pay any taxes, and billions of dollars in assistance from Israeli Jewish taxpayers. And all they do is complain. They get everything for free, everything on a silver platter, free housing, everything for free, everything on a silver platter. Things which Jews never get. Jews never get that from the Jewish state. The Jews, the rulers of Israel, bend over backwards to help all of Israel's enemies, to show how fair they are and how objective and how politically correct they are. I mean, it's the most self-hating, sick situation you could see anywhere in the world. And so, if some Jewish kids decide enough is enough, and we're going to show that some Jews are going to fight back, and some Jews at least are going to respond to some degree, to turn that into some huge witch hunt and make such a big deal about that, and arrest Jewish kids, arrest 13, 14, 15-year-old Jewish kids, put these Jewish children in prison, while you're negotiating with Muslim terrorist mass murderers like Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, Fatah, and the PLO, that is an outrage. It is anti-Semitism of the worst type. It is an outrage. Many average Israelis agree with what I've just said now, especially young Israeli Jews. Many young Jews in Israel agree with, first of all, they agree with Tag Mechir. And I haven't said we agree with what Tag Mechir does because we're a law-abiding organization and we're not allowed to agree with Tag Mechir. We're not allowed to applaud what they're doing. However, the law cannot stop us, the law cannot force us to condemn them, and we do not condemn them. We do not condemn them. And I want to say furthermore that when Jews are arrested for trying to help the Jewish people, when Jews are in trouble and Jews are arrested, we will try to help them. We will do whatever we can to help them. We're going to speak up for them, and we're going to try to help them and try to defend them. Because we're loyal to our principles. And we don't stab good Jews in the back. Good Jews who risk their lives and their freedom to help their people We don't stab those people in the back. Any normal, sane people would never arrest Jews that are fighting for their that are fighting to save their brothers and sisters. Never arrest them. Jews that fight to save their brothers and sisters should be considered to be heroes. And in any other country, they would be considered to be heroes. And I'm not referring specifically here now to the Tag Mechir Jews. I'm talking about, in general, Jews that fight to save their brothers and sisters as a general principle. We are a law-abiding organization, and we're very careful to be a law-abiding organization, but the law cannot compel us to condemn our fellow Jews, and we will not do that. And we are allowed to say that we believe that these Jews are innocent. We are allowed to say that these Jews should be released and should never have been arrested to begin with. And that is something we're going to say, and that's something we're going to fight for. Because we don't stab good Jews in the back. And so, if you agree that these 14 Jewish kids, aged 13 to 16, who are such wonderful kids, that they should be released and freed, and that Jewish kids who love the Jewish people and if they're motivated by love of the Jewish people should not be arrested, that this should not happen, that the Israeli police and the Israeli army and the Israeli government should be focused on getting Arab terrorists that are murdering Jews. That's what they should be focused on, the enemies of the Jewish people, not people who are trying to defend Jews. If you believe that's true, then you're in the right place, because we're the only organization that says this. No one else says this. Even though, by the way, everything I've just said now is perfectly legal. I have every legal right to say what I've just said now, under American law and under Israeli law. Now, having said that, once again, I believe that these 14 Jewish kids were not involved. I hope they're released. I hope they're freed. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But let it be understood that the fact that there are Jewish kids who feel that they can't just sit back and watch this in silence, that they have to do something, and apparently, according to the news media, there are large numbers of Jewish kids that feel this way, that fact should give us hope. It shouldn't be a cause for despair and alarm. In the media, there's despair and alarm over this. What is this? What are our kids going crazy here? What is this? Going crazy. This should give us hope that at least there's some Jewish kids out there that are sane and that are not as gutless as the worms in the news media and the government and the police of Israel. We support Jews that love their people and fight for their people. As simple as that. And again, these kids are innocent. They should be released. We're law-abiding. We don't encourage any illegal activity. But these kids did nothing wrong and should be released. That's our position. If you agree, you're in the right place. Because we're the only group that is saying what I'm saying right now, even though a lot of average Israeli Jews agree with what I'm saying now. That's Israel, where once again, our Hebrew movement and our English language movement, we're the only ones who take certain positions, we're the only ones who take these stands, because we're not afraid to take politically incorrect stands if it's the truth. The truth has to be told. Someone has to tell the truth. Someone has to. And I want to speak to you also about Ted Cruz again. Ted Cruz, he's an example, he's a Gentile example in America of someone standing up against the establishment. Look at how they hate him. Look at how they're going after him. He's the only politician that really has bucked the establishment and gone right in their face and has said, no, we won't accept this, we won't accept Obamacare, we're going to fight Obamacare, and is putting pressure on the phony, baloney, Republican political prostitutes who call themselves elected leaders and forcing them to do things that they otherwise wouldn't do. Every day that goes by, my respect for Ted Cruz grows. And I hope he'll set an example for Israel as well, because that's what we need in Israel. We need someone like that in Israel as well. And look at how they hate him, all the other politicians. Look at how they try to stab him in the back. Let me tell you something. If we don't get somebody like that in the White House in the United States, America's finished. America's finished if we don't get somebody like that in the White House. If we do get somebody like that in the White House, if a Ted Cruz is elected president, I think America has some hope again. I think that could give America some hope again. I also think it might give Israel hope again. I really think that he could be the type of person who could inspire people like him and like our movement to grow in Israel, because he sets the example. And that's one of the reasons why, I mean, I think it's a major reason why it's worthwhile for us to support him. Yes, the odds are against him, and yes, the overwhelming odds are against him, and I know the polls are showing Hillary Clinton is going to get elected president, and all of the Republican candidates are losing by double-digit margins to Hillary Clinton, and everybody's saying it's a hopeless election. I know all of that, and that may be true, but I still think we have to take a stand for the truth. We have to stand up and fight for the truth. And let's hope that something good happens. Let's hope that somehow the American people wake up by 2016 and something good happens. We're going to try. I think our videos, our latest videos, both in Hebrew and in English, have been outstanding. Our Hebrew videos bring a truth to the people of Israel that they get nowhere else. And our English language videos, I think, on behalf of Ted Cruz and on behalf of the campaign against Obamacare, I think our English language videos have been outstanding. I think we can all be proud of them. We're going to continue to bring you that. We're going to continue to be part of that fight. And hopefully it'll be something that will gain momentum. Remember, if he's been able to do this, and he is, again, he's the one responsible for all this. I mean, the Democrats claim that he's become like the real Speaker of the House, that he's dictating what the House is doing now. This is incredible. This is a guy who's only been in the Senate 9 months. That's a leader. That's a leader who knows how to get results and who's effective. That's really what we need. So we're going to fight for him, and we're going to try our best. We haven't given up, not in Israel and not in America. We're going to stand for the truth and be true to our principles. And I believe that if we stand for the truth and are true to our principles, that we're going to accomplish, God willing, we're going to accomplish things. I think the mere fact that we're the only organization defending Jewish kids, for instance, innocent Jewish kids when they get arrested. We're the only ones speaking common sense about what Israel's policy should be. I think that in and of itself makes our organization so essential. It's so important that someone speak the truth. We're not allowed to sit back silently while terrible things happen and allow terrible things to happen and not tell the truth. We're not allowed to do this. We're obligated to speak up and to try to promote justice. That's what we're going to do. At least with us, you know that's with one group that you know is going to try its best to do that. Even when it is against the odds. Even when it is. But you know, it was against the odds for us to win the battle to free Soviet Jewry, and in the end, the Soviet Jews were freed. The Jewish people surviving for thousands of years, that was certainly against the odds. The Jewish people winning wars in 6 days when they were outnumbered 100-1, that was against the odds. If anyone says to us that we're like David versus Goliath, I agree, we are like David versus Goliath. But don't forget something. David won that battle against Goliath. So just because it's a David versus Goliath battle doesn't mean that it's a hopeless battle. There is a God, and there's always hope in the world when you stand up for what's right. And if we don't succeed, there are times when we don't succeed. Last year we had a big campaign against Obama, and Obama was reelected. There are times when we don't succeed. it is still important that we took a stand and told the truth. I still think that that was important. I don't regret having conducted the campaign we did against Obama. Anyway, if you agree that the truth has to be told, and if you agree that we're not allowed to be silent, we're not allowed to be politically correct at the expense of principles and justice and truth, we're not allowed to do that. If you agree, then help us. Help us with our English and Hebrew videos. Our English and Hebrew videos are so good. They've been so good lately. Help us promote those videos. Like, favorite, comment, share, and mirror those videos on Facebook and on YouTube so that more people will get the message. We got to reach as many people as we can. Help us on our forums and our Facebook pages. Make the forums and Facebook pages inviting places so people will want to get involved with the movement, so people want to come to us for facts and information, and so that people will want to become active with us. Good posts and good threads on the forums and on the Facebook pages and responding on the forums and the Facebook pages. Those are all things that make our forums and our Facebook pages places where more and more people will want to express themselves and eventually to get involved, God willing. And finally, last but not least, checks, money orders, cash donations sent to our post office box obviously is so important. Our big downfall is our pathetic budget. Tens of thousands of dollars every year. That's what we raise, tens of thousands of dollars. And we say things that no one else will say. We tell truths that no one else will tell. And that's only worth tens of thousands of dollars? When billions of dollars are spent on lies? What a tragic commentary on this world and on this generation. Every check, every money order, every cash donation makes a big difference. Because we have so little and we have so much that we want to do. And every time people help us, we can reach more people and get a little bit further in spreading our message and in trying to make a difference. So please help us. It's very important. God bless the great JTFers who are helping us. And of course, people can go conveniently with their credit cards. They can go to the donate button if they would prefer to do it with their credit cards online, to the donate buttons on the English main page, jtf.org, on the Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. There's a donate button on top, and it's very easy and convenient if someone wants to make a donation online. I'm very encouraged by what's happened in Israel this past week. I'm encouraged by the fact that I see a generation of young Jews who are not giving up, who are not surrendering, and who are saying, we're not going to tolerate this. We're not going to allow you to murder Jews, and we're going to strike back. And by the way, one of the things Tag Mechir does is they retaliate also against the police and against the Israeli establishment when they do something against Jewish settlers. Tag Mechir defends the Jewish settlers. Again, we're not encouraging anything illegal. We're not allowed to by law, and we're a law-abiding organization. But when there are Jewish youth who support the land of Israel, that is very positive. And when there are Jewish youth who are true patriots and truly fear God and truly believe in the Torah and are filled with a burning desire to help their people and help this worthy, noble cause, that tells me that idealism is alive among a segment of young Jews in Israel. That gives me hope. That encourages me beyond words. It gives me new hope that all is not lost. Od lo avda tikvatenu, it says. Tikvatenu is the Israeli national anthem, and the climax of the Israeli national anthem are the words Od lo avda tikvatenu. Our hope is not yet lost. Those words were written after the 6 million Jews were murdered in the Holocaust and the Jews wanted to create a Jewish state, when any other people would have lost hope. But the Jews didn't lose hope at that time, and they did fight back, and they created a Jewish state. Our hope will never be lost because God has promised that in the end we're going to win. And so we should be inspired, especially when we see kids who day and night are being brainwashed by the media, the educational system, by everybody to accept this insanity, and they refuse to accept it. That especially should inspire us. That should show us that they're not going to extinguish the flame of Jewish hope and faith and righteousness. We want to help those good people who are idealists. We're idealists. And in the end, we're going to prove that the idealists are not fools, that the idealists are right, that we can make this a better world, and that working to make this a better world and devoting ourselves to make this a better world really is what life is all about. All right, let's get to our questions now from our great JTFers. And we start off with Rabbi Lipschitz, who is relatively new to the forum. I want to welcome you again to the forum, Rabbi Lipschitz. Rabbi Lipschitz writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you have any ideas about how Hasidic Jews can be convinced of the truth of Kahanism? Thank you and may Hashem, and thank you and Hashem bless," unquote. Yes, I think that we have to bring the message to our Hasidic brothers and sisters that we are a tshuva movement. We are a religious Torah movement, and we want to convince Jews to do tshuva. Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik VeKadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, wanted the Jewish people to return to the Torah, and we're a movement that wants to encourage that. The stronger we get, the more Jews will be motivated to return to the Torah. The stronger we get in Israel or in America. That means the stronger we are, the stronger Torah Jews are. The stronger Torah Judaism is. The stronger the movement to get Jews to do tshuva is. We are aggressively fighting against evil forces that are anti-Torah. And that is something that every Hasidic Jew should agree with. And we should bring them that message. And again, we are a Torah movement. We are a religious movement. We're a movement that wants all Jews to do tshuva. Yes, we have within our ranks secular Jews as well, because we invite all Jews to join our movement. So we have secular Jews in our movement. But we always encourage Jews to do tshuva. And why would our Hasidic brothers and sisters not agree with that goal? That's a goal that we all should share. Thank you, Rabbi Lipschitz. And now we go to the great wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what is your opinion on Yaakov Smirnov?" Yaakov Smirnov, of course, is the comedian, a Russian-Jewish comedian. Very successful. He's now wealthy. He's successful. What does he do for his fellow Jews? I mean, the guy has earned millions of dollars. He's very successful. Does he do anything for his fellow Jews? All that he does is he works with Hollywood leftists and writes for the left-wing magazine AARP. I know because my mother gets AARP. My mother's in her 80s, and she gets AARP. My mother's actually 80, and she gets AARP. For free, by the way. She's not a member. She would never be a member of that left-wing organization. She despises it, but because she's a senior citizen, they automatically send it to her. She hates them, but they automatically send it to her. That's, by the way, AARP supported Obamacare, supports Barack Hussein Obama, supported Hillary Clinton when she was proposing socialized medicine. I mean, it's just an evil organization. And this guy is one of the writers. Smirnov writes for this left-wing magazine? That's what he learned from getting out of the Soviet Union? I wish he would help us. I wish he would help the Jews that got him out of the Soviet Union. We're the ones that got him out of the Soviet Union. I sat in jail 5.5 years so that he could be free. I actually don't want him in America. I want Jews. I wanted the Russian Jews all to go to Israel, not to come to America. That's another problem. I would hope that he would decide to help us instead of AARP and instead of all the Hollywood leftists. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our good friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think about how the Republicans trying to stop Obamacare? I hope they do, thanks, unquote. Well, I think it's very important that they continue this fight. It's going to be difficult to stop because you know, they always say, well, Obama controls the White House and the Democrats control the Senate, so you can't stop it. But that doesn't, the Republicans still control the House. They cannot fund it without majority support in the House. Why should the House fund Obamacare? The House can refuse to fund Obamacare and should. And should say, we're just not going to fund it. We'll fund the rest of the government, but we're not going to fund Obamacare. That's what Ted Cruz is proposing. And that's what should be done. This is going to be a long, difficult battle, Joe. A long, difficult battle. And in the end, it'll probably only be settled in the 2016 presidential election. If Ted Cruz is elected president, Obamacare is gone. He will eliminate it. That's for sure. If there's one thing he's shown, he will not compromise on that. He has not compromised, and on that issue, he won't compromise. So, you know, that would be the ultimate goal. But in the meantime, I hope they keep fighting. I think the Republican establishment people eventually are going to sell out, unfortunately. But in the meantime, Ted Cruz is keeping their feet to the fire and keeping the pot boiling. And I think that's good. I think that's good. I think the fight against Obamacare has to continue. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to another new member, Alessa Rode. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Welcome to the forum. Alessa Rode writes, and I quote, "Hi, I'm new. My name is Michael. Question is, who can I speak with? Is with Israel about facts of Bibi, Obama, 9/11, 12 phone call. Herein lies a story forgotten, which may see." Okay, and then I guess you didn't finish. Unquote. Okay. I'm not sure exactly what you want to speak about. It's not 100% clear from your question. But I guess you can write to the administrators on the forum, or you can open up a thread on the forum and ask questions on the forum. Or you can ask questions through AskJTF. You can ask questions through this program or on the forum. You can open up a thread and ask questions. I hope we can be helpful to you, and I hope we can work together. Once again, welcome to our forum. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "One, what does it mean to, quote, walk with God, unquote?" Okay, that's a great question. The first time that that's really mentioned in the Torah is in Bereshit. Perek Hei is chapter 5. Pasuk, Kaf Dalet, which is verse 24. It may be Kaf Gimel, which is verse 20. It's either Kaf Dalet or Kaf Gimel. It's either verse 24 or verse 23. And it says in the Pasuk, it says in that verse in Bereshit, "Vayitalech Hanoch et ha'Elohim, ve'enenu ki lakach oto Elohim." What does that mean? That means, and Hanoch walked with God, and he was not, because God took him. What does that mean, Hanoch walked with God? It means that Hanoch had strong spiritual connection to God, a very strong spiritual connection. Possibly prophetic. To have a strong spiritual connection to God, you don't necessarily have to reach the level of being a prophet. But it may mean that Hanoch was a prophet. Hanoch might have been a prophet. He might have been a Navi. Or he might just have had just a strong spiritual connection, but not actually being a prophet. Because you can even with even with a lesser connection than being a prophet, you can still have a very strong connection to God. So Chanoch obviously believed in one God, and obviously, and we're talking about thousands of years ago and way before the Torah was given, and even before Abraham, even before the Jewish people was created, and here you have somebody who believed in God, was walking with God, and possibly was even a prophet of God at that time. So that's very significant. It shows that in every generation, you had someone who had some connection to God. And in this case, it was Chanoch. Next question, two. Why on day three creation does it say it was good twice or two times? Okay, what is Dr. Dan referring to here? He's referring to the fact that, generally speaking, on each day of creation, God usually says, Ki Tov. After he creates, he says, Ki Tov. Ki Tov means it was good. But on the third day, he says, Ki Tov twice. It's the only day out of the 6 days of creation. It's the only day when God says, Ki Tov twice, where he says it was good twice. Why? Because on the second day, Dr. Dan, on the second day, God didn't say it was good. Of all the 6 days of creation, on day one, he says it was good. On day two, he doesn't say it was good. It's the only day out of the six where he doesn't say it was good after he created what he created. Why on the second day does God not say it was good when he says it was good on all the other days? Why is that the only day where he doesn't say it was good? Because on the second day, God separated the heavenly water from the earthly water. The heavenly waters from the earthly waters were separated. And that's all symbolic. All of this is symbolic. This was the beginning of machloket, of division and argument. God is dividing. And that was symbolic of argument and division and machloket. God created machloket on that day. And the purpose of creation is to create unity, achdut. God is one, his name is one. We want unity. We want unity in the world. We want unity with God. The purpose is to create unity. And when you create division, when you create machloket, that's not good. And so because the second day symbolizes separation of the waters, it symbolizes division. The symbolic meaning of that is that it's creating division also, that it also was the day when division would be created among people and when there would be argument among people. And so that's why God did not say it was good on the second day. Now, because God didn't say it was good on the second day, on the third day he says it was good twice to make up for the fact that he didn't say it was good on the second day. So the third day he was compensating for the fact that on the second day he didn't say it was good. Because on day one, day four, day five, day six, God says, Ki Tov, that it was good, once. Day one, four, five, and six, out of the 6 days of creation, he says it was good. On day two, he doesn't say it was good, because again, he's creating machloket, he's creating division and argument and separation, which goes against the long-term goal. The long-term goal of creation is unity. So he doesn't say it was good on day two. But on day three, he says it was good twice to make up for the fact that he didn't say it was good on day two. That's the reason why that took place. I hope this wasn't too confusing. I hope it was relatively clear. And now Dr. Dan writes, three, talk about Cain, Abel, and Seth. Okay. Cain and Abel, which is Kain Vehevel in Hebrew, was the story, the first story of murder in the Bible, in the Torah, where Kain murdered his brother Hevel because of jealousy. The two of them were making sacrifices to God. But Hevel took the best of his fruits and the very first of the fruits and the very first of what he had and was sacrificing that to God, the very first of his crops. He sacrificed the best and the first to God. And he was sincere, Hevel. And so God accepted, with love, God accepted his sacrifices. Cain didn't take the best. Cain said, you know what, I don't need this part anyway. So he took the leftovers and the stuff that he didn't really need anyway. And that is what he gave as a sacrifice to God. And he wasn't sincere. So God was not accepting his sacrifice the same way he accepted Hevel's sacrifice. Cain saw that, and Cain or Cain, in Hebrew it's Cain, Cain was jealous of Hevel. And so Cain murdered Hevel out of jealousy. And of course, obviously, the horrible implications of that story is it's something that, it's one of the things that eventually has to be corrected. Why do we have a story like that of Cain and Abel and murder and jealousy? All of these things are examples of characteristics that have to be corrected. The whole purpose of life and existence and history is to correct these wrongs that exist. And so eventually we see this being corrected. We see among the 12 brothers of the tribes of Israel, we see that they wanted to murder Yosef. They wanted to murder Joseph. And Reuven intervened and they didn't murder Yosef. Reuven intervened. They didn't murder Yosef. But they still sold him into slavery. And so the problem had still not been corrected in as far as with Israel, with the 12 tribes. But all of history is an attempt to correct these bad characteristics, these bad aspects, and to create human beings who love each other, care about each other, sacrifice, are selfless, are idealistic, are obedient to God, believe in God, are faithful. Those are the characteristics we want to build. And all of history is to move us to the point where eventually we're going to achieve those goals. And will that eventually happen? There's no question eventually it will happen. We're going to eventually reach those goals. But all of history is to move away from the negative characteristics and move us toward the positive characteristics that God demands of us. And Dr. Dan also asks about Seth. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Seth, but in Hebrew it's Shet. Shet was the third son of Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava are Adam and Eve. He was the third son. He was the spiritual son. He's the one that the Torah describes as still being in the image of God. In other words, the spirituality continued through him. It says that he was in the image of God. Why does it say he was and it doesn't say his two brothers were? Because only he was. He continued the spiritual he was the spiritual representative for that generation. Because in every generation, someone represents spiritual good. And he was that representative. Shet was that representative after Adam and Eve. Thank you very much, Dr. Dan. And great questions as always. And now we go to our great friend, Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, your opinion on the Confederate flag, unquote. I think the Confederate flag is something that should be respected. It's the flag of 11 southern states. I think it was sad that the United States was divided and that there was a civil war. I'm not happy about the fact that there was a civil war. But I think that we have to respect the history of different parts of the country. And I think the southern part of the United States has every right to be proud of their history and every right to wave the Confederate flag along with the flag of the United States. That's my opinion. And I know there are people who say you're not allowed to wave the Confederate flag because they say it's a racist flag, which I don't believe is true. You can't wave the Confederate flag. But these same people will wave the flags of the PLO and Fatah and black African flags that are really racist. That's fine. But if someone waves a Confederate flag, that's unacceptable. No, baloney. They say the Confederate flag is associated with slavery. All the blacks in this country that want to become Muslims are adopting the religion that started slavery. It was the Muslims that started the black slave trade in Africa and that still have black slaves to this day. And so for them to attack the Confederate flag, I mean, this is hypocrisy. It's absurdity. It's historic ignorance and hypocrisy and an absurdity. Southerners have every right to be proud of their heritage and of their history. And if they want to wave the Confederate flag, they should have every right to do so. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Lewinsky sucks, Dr. Brennan rocks, unquote, who writes, and I quote, "When Gingrich and Santorum said there is no Palestine, they suffered hits in the polls. How would Cruz avoid the same fate?" Unquote. Oh, wait a minute. That's not accurate. First of all, Santorum never said there is no Palestine. Okay, Santorum disagreed with Gingrich when he said there is no Palestine. He disagreed with him. You can go back to the debates. You can look it up on YouTube. Santorum never said there is no Palestine. That's number one. Secondly, they never suffered any negative fallout from their positions on Israel. Gingrich and Santorum did take pro-Israel positions in regard to Iran, in regard to a number of issues, they did take pro-Israel positions. They never suffered any negative fallout from that. The opposite, especially for a Republican candidate. The best thing you can do is be pro-Israel because of the evangelical Christian vote. That is very, very positive in the Republican Party to be pro-Israel. Maybe in the Democrat Party it's a negative because the Democrat Party is an anti-Semitic party. But in the Republican Party, being pro-Israel is a positive. And any Republican candidate who wants the Republican base to turn out and wants an enthusiastic, massive Republican turnout, which we did not get in 2008 with John McCain, and we did not get in 2012 with Mitt Romney, if you want a big Republican turnout next time, you've got to excite the evangelical base. Because the Republican base, the Republican base of the party, about half of them, about 50% of the Republican base are evangelical Christians. And if you want to win the election, you've got to get them to turn out in mass numbers. And one of the issues most evangelicals care about is support for Israel. So Ted Cruz, if he takes a very pro-Israel stand, and he has not taken a stand yet on this issue that I've seen, we want to influence his position on this issue. If he takes a pro-Israel stand, it will help him in his campaign for the presidency. It will be positive and it will help him in his campaign for the presidency. That's what you're saying is not true. What you're saying is not true. Being pro-Israel is helpful. You'll notice, just to prove what you're saying is false, to prove how false it is. And forgive me for pointing it out, but I can't let that stand because it's damaging to repeat this falsehood that you're repeating here because it's just not true. To prove that what you're saying, that the opposite of what you're saying is true. That it's the absolute opposite of what you're saying. Both Democrats and Republicans pretend to be pro-Israel when they're running for president. They never pretend to be pro-Arab. They pretend to be pro-Israel when they're running for president. Both for the Jewish vote and for the evangelical Christian vote. So that just is not true. That is not true. Ted Cruz has nothing to lose and everything to gain by being solidly pro-Israel. Thank you very much, Lewinsky sucks, Dr. Brennan rocks. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "If you were an Arab born in the land of Israel, either in Jaffa or in Gaza or in Hebron, what would you do?" Unquote. "I would either convert to Judaism, I would be a ger, I would convert to Judaism, or I would be a ben Noach. I would want to be a righteous Gentile, or I want to be a Gentile who follows the laws of Noach. One of those two. That's what I would do if I were an Arab born in the land of Israel. And I would leave my own people because my own people are evil. My own people, the Arabs in Israel, my fellow Arabs in Israel, if I were an Arab, I would consider my fellow Arabs. If I were a moral person, I would think of my fellow, I would be horrified to be associated with such evil, cruel, vicious people. That's what I would do." And now Tag Mechir writes, and I quote too, "Perush HaMakabi Shiur, lengthier please," unquote. Okay, let's see. One of the things Rabbi Kahana wrote about in his book, Perush HaMakabi, was that there were 480 synagogues with yeshivot in Jerusalem, aside from Beit HaMikdash. In other words, in the time of the temple, the time of Beit HaMikdash, the second temple he's speaking about here, in the time of the second temple, Beit HaMikdash, there were 480 synagogues with yeshivot in Jerusalem, in addition to Beit HaMikdash. 480 in just one city. All of them were destroyed eventually because of Sinat Chinam, because of needless hatred. God punished the Jews, and all of them were destroyed because of Sinat Chinam, because of needless hatred. Now, what does that prove? According to Rabbi Kahana, what that proves is that mass Torah learning will not prevent catastrophe if it's not based on real love for Jews and real action to save the Jewish people. In other words, you could have massive Torah learning where everybody's learning and there are huge numbers of synagogues and this one builds a bigger synagogue than that one and this one has another yeshiva and another extension, another this, another that, and another program. And yet, it will not stop catastrophe, literally catastrophe and destruction from taking place, mass destruction, God forbid, from taking place. It will not prevent that. It will not save the Jewish people if all of that Torah learning is not based upon love for the Jewish people, fulfillment, actual fulfillment of the mitzvot, of the commandments, by loving the Jewish people and acting on their behalf and settling the land of Israel and defending the land of Israel. If it's not based on that, all the Torah learning in the world will not save the Jewish people. So Torah learning is essential. Every Jew should learn Torah, and every Jew should be familiar with Torah, and every Jew should follow the mitzvot. But it has to be based on Ahavat Am Yisrael, which means love of the Jewish people, Ahavat Eretz Yisrael, love of the land of Israel. And it has to be based upon action and deeds. Because we know from history that if it's just learning, and there isn't real love for the Jewish people, and in fact there's actually needless hatred there, even though there's massive learning, that's not going to save the Jewish people in the end. That was one thing that Rabbi Kahana wrote that I thought was brilliant. And another thing that he wrote about was, why do we get tired at the end of the day and we have to go to sleep? Why does that happen? We get weak and we get tired to remind us of how vulnerable we are as human beings. And we got to go to sleep to remind us of eventual death, of the fact that eventually we're going to go to sleep forever, that we're going to die. Well, hopefully not forever. People that will rise again with Techiyat HaMetim, with resurrection of the dead, but eventually we're going to go to sleep in the grave. So the purpose of our getting tired and going to sleep is to remind us of our vulnerability and remind us of our weakness as human beings, and to remind us of eventual death. Now, it's also to teach us, as Rabbi Kahana so extensively quotes in Perush HaMakabi, quotes from Gemara and from the Mishnah and from the Nevi'im, from the prophets, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah. He quotes from the prophets extensively on this, that we don't take our possessions with us when we die. The only thing that we take with us are the mitzvot that we performed, in other words, the commandments that we kept, and the deeds that we did, the good things we did in the world, that we take with us into the next world on the Day of Judgment. And our Torah knowledge we take with us into the next world on the Day of Judgment. But we do not take any earthly possessions with us. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have earthly possessions. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't work to make a living and to have a home and to support a family. We should do all of those things. But we should never forget that those things are just a means. They're not the end. The end and the goal is to do good things, to make this a better world, to care about our families and our people and making this a better world, and to stand up for what's right. Those are the really important things in life. And that is something that we will take with us into the eternity. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to The great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, JTF helped bring down the Soviet Union, but the Berlin Wall also fell and Germany was reunited. Are two Germanys, one communist and one democratic, better than today's united Germany, unquote? Well, Germany will never be forgiven, Binyamin, for murdering over 6 million Jews during the Holocaust. Germany as a nation can never be forgiven. Individual Germans, there may be a minority of individual Germans who were a small minority, who are not Nazis and who regret what happened. They have free will, and if they genuinely do regret what happened and condemn and despise what happened and support the Jewish people, then you know they're not going to be destroyed, those individuals. But Germany as a nation will be destroyed as a national entity. It's only a matter of time. I don't know how, I don't know exactly when, but it will happen. And if you say, well, what about it should have happened during the generation of the Holocaust? Things do not always happen when you would think that they should happen, because sometimes that generation of Jews don't merit that type of justice. The Jews of that generation didn't merit that type of justice. But I can assure you, in the next world, that generation of Germans, you know, most of them are already dead, that generation of Germans that lived during the Holocaust and that carried out the Holocaust, I can assure you, in the next world, what they're going through now is much worse than Auschwitz. Much worse. And their Auschwitz will never end. They'll be punished eternally for what they did to God's people. And Germany as a nation will not survive because of what they did. They have no right to live and survive after what they did to the Jewish people, after trying to exterminate the entire Jewish people. What they did to the Jews, what they tried to do to the Jewish people, and what they did do to the Jewish people will happen to them as a nation. Again, individual people of German descent, and again, I'm especially not referring to German Americans, because there are many German Americans, but there may be German Americans, for instance, who are evangelical Christians who now are strong supporters of Israel. So I'm certainly not referring to German Americans. But the Germans in Germany, there may be a small group of Germans in Germany who are not anti-Semitic and who regret what happened and who really support Israel and the Jews. They can save themselves as individuals, but on a national level, Germany will not be saved. That's just not going to happen. Whether it's divided into two Germanys or one Germany, in the end, they're going to face the worst possible judgment for the unforgivable crime, the worst crime in human history. The Holocaust was the worst crime in human history from the standpoint of God, because 6 million of his people were brutally burned and gassed, and that is something that God will never forgive. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to our good friend Camel Jockeys Murder 59 People in Nairobi, Kenya, who writes, and I quote, why does David Horowitz allow Stephen Suleiman Schwartz, a Jewish communist who converted to Islam, to write for Front Page magazine, unquote? Because David Horowitz is a phony sellout. David Horowitz was a Jewish communist. David Horowitz admitted that he and his family were communists, that his parents were members of the Communist Party. They worshipped Stalin. They considered themselves to be secret agents for the Soviet Union. These are his parents. This was his family. This was him. He was a communist. And not just a communist, a Stalinist communist. I mean, communists, all communists are evil. But this was a Stalinist communist. Stalin murdered more people than Hitler. And, you know, that was David Horowitz. Now he claims to be a so-called conservative. He's part of the establishment. He's such a phony. So, of course, he welcomes this guy who's a Muslim now. This is a guy. I don't know if he's Jewish, by the way, this guy. I'm not sure if he's... I know his father was Jewish. I don't know if his mother was Jewish, so I don't know if he's halakhically Jewish. But this is a guy whose parents, Stephen Suleiman Schwartz, he was also a communist. And his parents were communists, just like David Horowitz was a communist, and his parents were communists. Isn't it amazing all these commies get together, and all of a sudden, when it becomes advantageous for them, They pretend to be conservatives and say, I was once a communist, but now I'm a conservative, so give me, you know, so make me a big hero on Fox News and all these other, you know. Come on, please. He invites other communists, and in this case, a Jew who wants to be a Muslim, who converts to Islam, he invites them to Front Page Magazine. Now, when people asked him, when he David Horowitz, you know, signed up to our forum, and in order to respond to something that was written in our forum, and when he was asked about me personally and about our forum and getting in and working together, he said, no, that he wouldn't, no. Chaim ben Pesach and the Jewish Task Force, that was too much for him. But working with people like his family who were Stalinists, that's okay. That's okay. Working with people who were Stalinists, who murdered tens of millions of people, that's okay. Working with someone who converts to Islam, to the Quran, a book that preaches the extermination of all non-Muslim infidels, and that's okay. A Jew who wants to become a Muslim now is allowed to write for his magazine. That's okay. The Chaim ben Pesach and JTF, because I fought for Soviet Jews, and because I went to prison fighting to save Soviet Jews from people like David Horowitz and his evil communist family, I'm unacceptable. And JTF is unacceptable. So, typical establishment phonies. Thank you, Camel Jockeys, murder 59 people in Nairobi, Kenya. And now we go to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, there are many lawsuits targeting Obamacare. Is there a possibility that Obamacare will be brought down by the Supreme Court? Unfortunately, I don't think so. I think last year, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, decided to back Obamacare. Justice Roberts, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, who was appointed by George W. Bush, he was the traitor who became the decisive vote on the court to approve Obamacare, and he saved Obama's presidency. Obama would have been defeated for re-election. Had the court ruled against Obamacare, the crown jewel of Obama's first term, had they ruled against that, Obama would not have been reelected. That would have been the end for him. That would have been such a devastating blow, he wouldn't have been reelected. But a Supreme Court justice appointed by George W. Bush, Roberts, saved Obamacare, and the Supreme Court ruled in favor of it, and I don't think that that's going to change. Thank you, unfortunately. Thank you, Da Vinci. And now we go to the great Dan Ben Noach. He's our great administrator. He does so many great things for us. He subtitles. He provides English subtitles on all of our Hebrew videos. He has such great threads and posts on the forum. He does so many great things for us. Anyway, Dan Ben Noach writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, as Prime Minister, what would you do about the women of the wall? Would they have to change their name to the Kurbas of the Coffin, unquote? Well, at the very least, they would be outlawed. I'm not going to go beyond that, Dan Ben Noach, except to say it would definitely be against the law what they're trying to do. What they're trying to do would be illegal. Nobody is going to deliberately desecrate this holiest place in the world for the Jewish people, these feminist lesbian animals, ugly feminist lesbians from Long Island, are not going to come and desecrate the holiest place in the world for the Jewish people. That will not be tolerated. What they're doing will be illegal at the very least. Thank you so much, Dan, and thank you so much for everything you're doing. And now we go to our good friend Papercut, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, is there a rabbi on YouTube who teaches Judaism that you would recommend for JTFers, unquote? Unfortunately, in the English language, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I haven't looked and searched, and I just don't know if there is. I'm sorry, I apologize, but I don't know the answer to that. There might be. There probably are rabbis who teach things that in some cases we might disagree with. But in general, you could still learn a lot of things from them about Judaism. There probably are rabbis that you can learn a lot from, even though you have to pick and choose and understand where to disagree. Because they're not, you know, because we're Kahanists, and I don't know of any Kahanist rabbis that are giving lectures in English. But again, if there are, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know who they are. I don't know where they are. I honestly don't know. I'm sorry, paper cut. I apologize for that. And now, I really feel badly because it's a very important question. It's a very good question, a very important question. And now we go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "I've debated at least 10 people so far about Cruz, and I'm getting the feeling he will create Romney-style voter paralysis. Is there another option?" Unquote. No. No, LKZ. There is no other option. What do you mean you've debated 10 people? The opposite is true. He's not going to... You're comparing him to Mitt Romney? Are you kidding me? They're polar opposites. Mitt Romney is the establishment. Ted Cruz may be controversial, but he will not create apathy or indifference like Romney did. I mean, come on. If anyone will create excitement among the voter base, it will be Ted Cruz. LKZ, please, give me a break. Every time somebody is first running, there are always people going to say, oh, but I don't like this, or I don't know, and I don't this. And there are always going to be people who are going to argue. You don't think this happened when we were promoting Ronald Reagan? When he first started running? The same thing happened with Ronald Reagan and every other candidate that starts to run. But Ted Cruz is not Mitt Romney, and the results will not be the same. I'm not saying Ted Cruz would win. It's possible Ted Cruz can't win. It's possible he's too conservative for an America that has decided to become degenerate. It's possible nobody can beat Hillary Clinton because America now has a left-wing majority. That's possible. But he's not going to create voter paralysis or voter apathy. If anything, Ted Cruz creates excitement on both sides. I mean, if Ted Cruz is the Republican candidate running against Hillary Clinton, that'll be the most exciting election in my lifetime. That would be the most exciting election. Even though the odds would be against Cruz. The odds are going to be against any Republican winning. But even though that'll be an uphill fight, that would be an exciting election. That is not an election where there's going to be apathy from the voters. Thank you, LKZ. And now we go to our good friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, if Bill de Blasio or Warren Wilhelm becomes mayor of New York, will the city's crime rate spike and go back to the pre-Giuliani era?" Unquote. I don't know. I think there's a danger that could happen. I don't know if it's going to happen because obviously de Blasio has a motivation to try to prevent that from happening. I mean, that would be the end of his political career if that happens. I don't know. He may try to continue the same anti-crime policies, because I don't think he wants that to happen. That would kill his political career. But he is a socialist. He's a Marxist. He's an anti-Semite. He's a very sick, self-hating white who wants to be black, who's married to a black lesbian, and whose son wears a Black Panthers, Black Power 1960 style huge afro. I mean, he's a sick, disgusting swine. So he's certainly bad news for New York and bad news for the country. I do think he will try to keep the city's crime rate down. I think he's going to try. But we'll see what happens. He's so politically correct, the crime rate might spike. It might. I'm not sure that will happen because I think he has a very strong motivation not to allow that to happen, because that would really, really kill his political career if that happens. He'll never go anywhere outside. He may be mayor of New York, but I think he has higher political aspirations, God forbid, but he does have higher political aspirations, and he'll never go anywhere outside of New York if that happens. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to, and by the way, we do urge people to vote against Bill de Blasio in November. I don't like his Republican opponent, Joseph Lauda. I don't like him, but I think he's the lesser of the evils, and I think people should vote for him, even though I don't think Joseph Lauda has a chance. I still think people should vote for Joseph Lauda. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, do you think the recent acquisitions of Israeli companies by American multinationals is good or bad?" Unquote. I think it's bad. I think Israel has to be independent. I think that means economic independence, military independence, and I also think it means independence of the big corporations. If you have big multinational American corporations or other foreign corporations controlling the Israeli economy, I think that's bad. I don't think that's good for the nation's independence. I think it creates more of the type of dependency that endangers Israel and that leads to the blackmail of Israel and that makes it more difficult for us to pursue the policies that we want to pursue. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And now we go to the great Ephraim ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, could you talk about the past Haftarah? I'm so grateful for this forum. Thank you for making it possible," unquote. First of all, Ephraim, thank you so much for all that you do on the forum. You are truly one of the great JTFers, and it really is an honor and a privilege to work with you, Ephraim. The past Haftarah would be for Parashat Noach. Parashat Noach this year has as the Haftarah Hashamayim Kis'i, which is from Yeshayahu Hanavi, the prophet Isaiah. Hashamayim Kis'i means the heavens are my seat or are my throne. And the reason why that's relevant to Parashat Noach is the parashah, the Torah portion involving the flood and Noah. The reason it's important for God to remind us of his great power and his majesty and the fact that he controls the heavens and the earth is to remind people as to why things like the flood took place, because of violence and injustice and all of the terrible evil that existed in the world. And God wanted to cleanse the world of all the terrible evil that exists in the world, and it's a warning to the world for all generations that evil and injustice will not be tolerated. God goes on to say in the Haftarah how he watches over the poor and how he watches over those who are oppressed. This is to remind us that we must pursue justice and we must always be righteous in our relationship with our fellow human beings and in our relationship with God. That's the purpose of this week's Haftarah. Thank you again so much, Ephraim. And we have the great Gambashan the Gamgilad, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Der Chaim. What from your perspective led Barack Hussein Obama to suddenly talk about removing the sanctions in Iran? Thanks, Gambashan," unquote. I think Barack Hussein Obama was always against the sanctions in Iran. He never liked the fact that there were sanctions on Iran. He always tried to dilute the sanctions. He has given dozens of exemptions and dozens of times he tried to dilute the sanctions that Congress passed. So he has never been in favor of sanctions on Iran. He is an enemy of Israel, and what he's doing really, really is the best thing that the Iranians could ever hope for. I think that the situation is very dangerous. The only hope is for Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel to finally realize that the only hope for survival is to ignore Obama and to destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. That's something we've been saying for years, and it is certainly more true now than it ever was. Thank you so much, Gambashan. And we have a question from 1-800-F... Okay. F1, etc. Obama. Okay, F Obama. "The Pope has just said he will inquire into excommunicating Nancy Pelosi. Comments on this and the new Pope," unquote. Well, I don't know. I don't think he's going to excommunicate Nancy Pelosi. I don't believe that. And I don't like what the new Pope has been saying about trying to legitimize homosexuality and trying to legitimize the pro-abortion position and trying to make the church more politically correct and more palatable to the left. I don't like that whole... I think the whole thing is very, very bad. I think that, this is a politicizing theology, I think, is something that is always very bad. Thank you very much, 1-800. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, shalom.